The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Today on the show, we have Eric Yong, MD of Crest Builders Holdings Berhad. Eric, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Well, Crest Builders started out with less than 10 staff in the early 1980s, and today it has grown to over 300 staff under its stable. And today, Eric, you are leading the company as the second generation of the founding family. Talk to us. I mean, how has the journey been for you at the driving seat 3 years in as MD?
Okay, maybe to start off, I would say the group was founded the same year I was born, back in 83. So back then, my father started it and it was a very small fledge. We did a lot of JKR projects. We did a lot of schools, bridges and those. Mostly government, very small infra contracts as well. And then came to the late 80s and early 90s when the whole country was gearing towards the North-South Highway. My dad back then decided to go more into building because he felt that infra was, although it was one of his favorite sector, in fact, but he felt that building has lesser competitors and lesser risk per se. So he wanted to try something different. So we embarked on our building construction journey. And then came to the 90s, we did a lot more larger buildings, including hospitals and more sophisticated ones. And then we took over MGR Corporation back in 2003 via RTO. This was our, I would say, the start of our golden years. So from 2003 onwards, I regret because I graduated and came back 2 weeks after my dad knocked the gong. So that was a unfortunate side for me. But then, well, nonetheless, I was still in there early enough. Mm. And a few years back when my dad was diagnosed with cancer, and then, well, he passed away 3 years back. So then I took over. I think the journey has been quite an eventful and also a very fruitful journey. When I started to take over, I decided to look more into consolidation because I'm unlike my dad. I think my dad is someone who's overly hands-on, and I prefer more on about empowerment. I like to see more of my next liners, my CEO, my COOs to also come up and groom the company together. But still having quite a lot of my father's spirit and blood in me, so I'm still quite hands-on as well. So we decided to look at more Klang Valley projects rather than just expanding beyond. So we were very focused on Klang Valley. And during the last 3 years, you can say that it was a fresh start to the company. So convincing big clients, I had to put my own head at stake. So certain clients such as Sime Darby, even the Desa Park City, we secured large projects from them. And I had basically stick my neck out there for them and basically say, like, okay, you know, you give me the job, I'll be hands-on on the project as well. And here's where I am. Yep.
I noticed that Crest Builder, that, you know, you guys have diversified into new businesses outside your bread and butter construction and property development segments. So you have ventured into property management as well as car park management. Share with us the rationale and, you know, plans for this diversification.
I would say for the diversification into property management, that came as the end result of completing the property development. And from the completed development, we try to go into management, whereby we manage and maintain the project. Car park management, surprisingly, is a very lucrative sector. I mean, going ahead, I would love to have more car parks to manage as well. I mean, if you look at car park, well, if you compare a car park management versus owning an office or managing an office has got a 1,001 maintenance items, your aircon, your lighting, your every other thing in there, water in there. But car park ultimately is just cleanliness, clean, and your car park system. And basically, you see, I mean, office tenants may choose not to pay or may choose to hold your payment, but if you park your car today, you have to pay by today. It's a cash business. It's a very lucrative business.
Okay, well, are you looking at any more new businesses to diversify into?
Currently, no, not exactly. But our existing subsidiaries, in fact, more particularly our M&E, mm-hmm. Mechanical and electrical, that is making a lot of headways recently. So I will continue to grow that side of the business. It's part of the construction, but eventually I do hope that it will become a solid profit center on its own.
Okay, speaking about construction, if I look at your segmental earnings, you know, it looks like margins from your construction business that has been squeezed. You know, what happened there? And do you expect that segment's margins to be squeezed further, dragging down the overall group?
I think if you look at these margins for construction, I think for most of the players in the last 6 months or 12 months or so, I think a lot of them felt a slight squeeze due to various challenges that are being faced right now. I mean, mm-hmm. one particular one, of course, is the foreign labour. I think foreign labour, but rather the legalisation of the foreign labour is continues to be a big challenge for all contractors in the country. I mean, costs are continuing to go up. Right now, I mean, sometimes with the procedures or rather the SOPs involved with legalisation of the foreign workers still remain a rather big question mark. So hence, some choose to operate with existing conditions, some choose to, you know, bite the bullet, pay a bit more. So we are still on a learning process in terms of the foreign workers. So but nonetheless, it's a long process, I would say. And of course, the other side is the building material prices. The last 12 months or so, although it seems to be quite stable, but it is still hovering upwards. It's slowly eating into the margins as well. Well, a little bit, but not as much. But it's a cause for concern. And further to that, of course, our current weak Malaysian ringgit is also one major cause of concern also, because there are still certain architectural products and so on are being imported, and all these are getting more expensive. Yeah.
Mm. Well, a closer look at your numbers, if I look at the overall group margins, gross profit margin, that has decreased to 23% in FY 2017 from 35% in FY 2016. As you just mentioned, this trend, you know, that it is a cause for concern. So what are you doing about this margin compression? I mean, what are your strategies to help this situation that you're in?
For construction, is actually always construction is a very cyclical sector. So, I mean, the contracts are not exactly a 1 month off or 2 months off. I mean, most of my contracts stretch beyond 24, 28. I mean, some are even as long as 39 months. So this is where I would say the cycle game comes into play. So as long as we keep securing projects, there will always be projects that you secure on the upside. There will always be projects that you secure on the downside as well. So, well, as long as, I mean, I believe that no cycle will last too long. So it's always, like you say, it's a cycle. So what comes around goes around. So I would say the numbers, as it picks up, it will also come down as well. So as long as any new projects that we secure in the more recent time, those will be more translated into actual numbers. Mm-hmm. Those that we secured, let's say, 1 year ago, let's say we secured on the low side, right now it will be affected slightly. But those going ahead, if today I secure a project and 1 year down the line the numbers, or rather the prices, go down, then you see the numbers start picking up. So it's, well, like I say, it's a cycle. Yeah.
Okay, well, speaking about contracts and projects, what's your order book looking like?
Right now, we are standing on the about 1.8 billion order book, and our unbilled order book is slightly below 1.2.
Okay, 1.8 billion order book, and this is all for construction.
Construction, I mean, it's a mix of both in-house and external contracts.
Interesting. So, yeah. So how long do you expect this to last?
As you can see, our revenue for 2017 was a record year. I expect 2018 to also surpass 2017's figures. And this order book will last us well into mid-2020.
So, interesting. So you think 2018 will be a record year as well?
Yes, definitely.
For
yes.
revenue, for profit, everything?
Yes, revenue and profit, yeah.
Okay, and this is supported by what?
The bulk of it is still construction, because mm-hmm. Right now, I would say revenue-wise, construction still accounts for more than about 60%+ of overall. Of course, margins-wise, property still command a fairly good margin. Mm. But going ahead with the few large contracts coming into the full swing stage, we expect the construction side to continue to be our main driver for the numbers.
Well, okay. So 1.8 billion ringgit order book. How much are you Do you have a figure of how much you're bidding for? How much projects you're going to be you are bidding for?
Okay, historically, we target for about 500 million every year.
Mm-hmm.
Based on sometimes we do tender between 2.5 to 3.5 billion. So this as of this year, we have secured about 600 plus million already, surpassed that. I hope to secure another, let's say, 200 to 300 million by end of the year. And then come to next year, I think the target will still be about 500 to 600 million. But annually, we do tender between, I would say, 3 to 4 billion.
Okay, so what's your outlook for the construction sector? It looks like you're quite positive.
Yes, currently, I would say, because with the feel-good factor since the GE14, I think everyone is on a, I would say, very happy with this fresh start to the whole country. And I think from construction-wise as well, I think there's a lot of room for new growth, a new start for everyone. In fact, with the mega projects although they are being reviewed or being shelved, I think that opens up a lot of space for the smaller projects or the mid-sized projects to come up. Because I personally think that the government will not cut off everything. I mean, you cut off somewhere, you have to throw in back. And on the other side, yeah.
Well, Eric, we have to go for an ad break, but we'll talk more about this doing business in the new Malaysia. So I'm speaking to Eric Yong, MD of Crest Builders Holdings Berhad. After this, we'll talk more about doing business in the new Malaysia as well as the property development sector that Crest Builders is in. Stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Grill and my guest today is Eric Yong, MD of Crest Builders Holdings Berhad. Eric, earlier we were talking about doing business in the new Malaysia. So in this new Malaysia that we are in, the game has changed for almost everyone when it comes to doing business. So how are you adapting? Because I noticed that you have contracts from DBKL, that's linked to the government. Mm-hmm. This is prior to G14. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have said that the company would like to do more with Chinese firms. But, you know, has our working relationship with China evolved since the cancellation of some China projects here? Also, you know, you have an ongoing working relationship with Prasarana for the Dangwangi LRT, and we know that Prasarana had a change at the top recently post May 9th. So have these contracts and plans been affected by the change in government, and how are you adapting to this new Malaysia?
Like I said earlier, I think with this new government administration, it's sort of like a soft reset button for the whole country. And I think one of the key things with this soft reset is it sets everyone back on square one. So, well, of course, some companies are getting maybe a little head start than others. But nonetheless, for contractors or construction and property sector, everyone's on a square one. Based on our recent government relations with the foreign side, China per se, I think this is just merely temporary. Going ahead, I believe the government will continue to have various new measures. In fact, I would say in the budget 2019, there will be a lot of new good ideas or good proposals that will come in there to attract more FDIs. Because, I mean, nonetheless, if you look at the Southeast Asia region, or basically ASEAN region per se, no country's economy depends only on their internal population. I mean, apart from China, but every other country out there actually depends a lot on FDIs, whether it comes from your immediate neighbors or comes from China or Australia and so on. So I think FDIs is still a very key factor to the growth of the country's economy.
So post May 9th, your business has not been impacted negatively at all, like any contracts, or because you have contracts with DBKL and also that ongoing on with Prasarana. Is that on hold? If it's not cancelled, is it on hold?
No, it's not cancelled on hold. I think one good thing is if you look at the contracts with the government per se that we have, is like DBKL effectively, although it's government, but then it's the project that we are building for them is actually car parks. It's a very essential need for the low cost and PPR housing. So these car parks are very, I would say, very important and essential for them. Hence, there's no reason for them to review or cancel this. Going ahead, we are still targeting such kind of nature of projects, basically based on the needs. I mean, if right now you're going to build a monument out of the blue, I think those projects will not go through. But then if it's going to be a need for the people, a need for the growth, I think those projects are still very safe.
Speaking about need for the people, I think a hot topic of discussion when it comes to need for the people is affordable housing. And there's a view that property developers do not construct enough affordable homes, with most of them preferring to sell to the mid to high income markets. Even you yourself, I think, Eric, you've just said in June that the company is looking to focus on high-end projects, right? So what's your view on affordable housing? And, you know, why do most developers, I mean, why are they shying away from it?
I think if you look at property-wise, if you were to split property segments into three, you have the ultra-luxury, our luxury, then you have your mid-levels, which is what I do a lot, and then you have your affordable, which is what the government term as affordable. You see, even like back in the days even during the last BN government, you know, you had Prima Housing, and then you had Rumah Selangor Ku by the state government. They all have different capping prices, which effectively, it causes a little problem to developers whereby we do not know, I mean, what is affordable housing supposed to be? Is it 250,000? Is it 400,000? Is it 300,000? You know, so all this come into play. But when we talk to, I would say, from the personal point of view, how I look at it is even my mid-range, where I'm selling between 500,000 to 600,000, and that works out to be maybe from, a monthly installment of between 2008 to 2005, I think that counts. To me, that is affordable because of the location. I'm selling you a Subang location. So that is considered affordable. But when you try to build affordable housing, let's say in Smack Right in KLCC or Smack Right in PJ area, it doesn't make so much sense. Whereas, you see, like, it should be a situation whereby with our current infrastructure, the people pay a bit more for property when you stay closer to the city centre. And then if you want more affordable housing, then you probably perhaps have to go a bit further out. Let's say, I mean, this is how it is in, let's say, Singapore, in Bangkok. I mean, Bangkok city centre, you will see all are luxury houses. The more affordable ones are easily 20 minutes or 40 minutes out of the city centre.
So what you're saying is that it doesn't really make business sense for property developers to look into the affordable housing depending on the location. So what can be done, though, to improve the affordability of homes here, in your opinion?
I think, firstly, the government need to do more, I would say, joint ventures with developers whereby perhaps they provide the land, they have increased density and so on. And from there, the developers take up the challenge to build affordable housing. And in return as well, they get to build extra, or they get incentives and so on to build affordable housing. Because, like, if you look at current property development margins, we are looking at between 15 to 25. I mean, if you're lucky, you'll get 25% or upwards. Or if you are on a prudent enough, maybe you are looking at anywhere in between 15 to 25. But if you look at affordable housing with our expensive land today, affordable housing effectively account, I mean, for effect, affordable housing project, probably the margins come down to as low as 5 to 6%.
But it's still margins, right?
It's still
making money.
But if you look at 5 to 6%, if you look at our government, I mean our property development policies and so on, with our loan approval rates, even let's say our boomi quotas and all these little things all add into place, the 5-6% is a very risky thing to have, because there's not good enough of a buffer to play, you see.
So do you think that, you know, that could come up in budget 2019? Are you hearing anything when it comes to budget 2019?
I think budget 2019 there'll be a strong focus on affordable housing, mm-hmm. as per what they promised during the GE14 manifestos. To me, I look at it, I'm not so concerned, because I believe that there will be plenty of that coming in.
Were you concerned then?
I think it's still the foreign investment policies, especially with dealings with, let's say, China investors or China purchasers. So right now you have got your 1 million capping or 2 million capping in Selangor kind of thing. So I think they will somehow lack this little ruling to improve the foreign investments next year onwards. Yeah.
But is there a concern, though, if the foreigners come in and buy all these high-end property, that would impact the overall prices of property, and then that would bring the prices of property up even further?
I think to become a high-income nation, I think this is the little bit that we need to we need to have. But going ahead with the assuming the economy starts picking up with more, increased foreign investments and so on, I actually think that the nation will actually benefit a lot more rather than suffer in this case.
Okay, because there are people out there who need homes but they cannot afford to, right? Yeah. So if the prices go up, then they would suffer.
Yes.
Yeah, as opposed to, I guess, for property developers, if you all focus on high-end projects,
Address that is more. It's more about curbing speculators, because right now, if you knock away the foreign investors, there's still a big amount of local speculators who are actually causing the prices to go up so much, and that is where we need to address. Because, I've seen a lot of speculators out there. They are on their sixth home or seven or eight home kind of thing, and they are still getting loans approved at 70-80%. So all these are quite ridiculous. I think it's something that we need to address. But it's something that this is a free market, so it's something that we can't really stop, but we need to have a bit more ruling on them, I would say.
What's your outlook for the property sector? Do you see an overhang?
Currently, yes, there seems to be a slight overhang or a mismatch due to, it's more of really a, somehow, I think Malaysia, or rather this year, is because it's an election year, so everyone had a wait and see approach. So most of the people on the streets, they do not know what our new government going to do, what our previous ministers they intend to say. All these little things somehow adds to the end effect of the whole. Economy confidence. And right now our confidence is really at a 50-50. So it's something that needs to be, would be cleared out towards by end of the year, because generally I think based on what the new government is doing, they seem to be on the right track, maybe a bit slower, but bear in mind they are quite inexperienced on this, so I think it's fair to give them a bit more time, but let's not take too long.
Yeah, what's your strategy for the property business in this new environment?
Currently, we are looking at various joint ventures with various pocket landholders, pocket land owners, because my style of property development is still, I'm not looking at townships and all this. I like to do more high-end or high-rise, high-density projects. Effectively, we are looking at more, quick turnaround time. If you could get a land today, joint venture with the landowner, it could launch it within 18 months. That would be a good timing, because nowadays land is getting too very expensive to come by. So joint ventures with them eases my cash flow, eases the capital as well. Yeah.
Which land are you looking at? Which area?
Right now I'm looking at Klang Valley, and we are looking at probably on the northern side as well. More northern side, because if you look at Kepong or right up to Selayang, that area is somewhat a very vibrant area, but seems to not have the kind of attention going in as much as you would want to right now. I see that area as a strong growth for us. Yeah.
So what's the target for Crest Builders in the next 3 to 5 years?
The company will continue to be a boutique player. In fact, I'm looking at more organic growth I'm not looking into M&As or acquisitions and so on. But I'm looking at various segmental growth. So for construction, it is quite stable at the moment, but I'm still looking at between 10-20% growth per annum. Property remains very cyclical as well due to land banking. So we are still looking at various land banking. So the next area of growth ultimately is the M&E, my other subsidiaries like the M&E and the even car park management or property management side. So M&E side, right now for 2017, they have been contributing well. 2017 was a record year. 2018 will also be a record year for them. So I hope perhaps in the next 2-3 years, the M&E arm will come out and become a sector on their own for the company.
Well, I've been speaking to Eric Yong, MD of Crest Builders Holdings Berhad. Eric, thank you for being on The Breakfast Grill today. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
I'm Joyce Goh for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's Mobile Data Service Provider of the Year.